gun, when accessible, is arguably the most powerful line of defense against a violent attacker. It is, as the old saying goes, the great equalizer, a device that makes it possible for you to effectively defend against multiple attackers, armed attackers, and even enable the smallest woman to fight off the largest man. Now, as we know, just owning a gun isn't enough to protect you. First, you have to know how it operates, how to fire it, and how to fire it accurately so you can stop any attacker in his tracks as fast as possible. But is heading down to the range to punch holes in a paper target really enough to prepare you for the reality of a real-life attack where you're forced to use your gun to defend yourself and those that you love? Will your ability to create a 1-inch shot group at 10 yards be enough to save you when the adrenaline is pumping through your veins and a 300-pound gang member is charging your way, knife in hand? Well, that's exactly what we're here to find out and prepare for. Hello, everyone. This is Jeff Anderson, president of the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants, and joining us tonight to share some practical strategies for developing your tactical skills for shooting under stress is a virtual legend in the combatives industry and somebody that I'm happy to call my good buddy, Peyton Quinn. Peyton, thanks for coming on again.
Glad to be here, Jeff.
Always great to have you on the course. Everybody looks forward to interview you and tapping into the nuggets that you're holding on to in that mind of yours. Listen, Peyton really is a legend in the self-defense industry, and he always kind of poo-poos that a little bit, but everybody knows his name in the industry, and that's for good reason. I mean, he's studied martial arts since he was the age of 14, but frankly, it was his experience as a bouncer in some of the toughest biker bars around that changed his entire outlook on the practical application of fighting arts to a real-world violent encounter. This realization ultimately led to the creation of one of the most realistic combat arts training workshops available anywhere in the world. And that's not my opinion, or not just my opinion, because I have gone through the course, but that's been written about in magazines. The realism in his course is unmatchable. Peyton has pioneered the field of adrenal stress training, and at his RAMCAT facility in Colorado, he's trained everyone from civilians to law enforcement officers to military personnel by putting them through the gauntlet of stress-induced scenario training and helping them develop the tactical mastery that they need to face any threat in the home, on the street, or on the battlefield. Now, for more information on Peyton and his training, you can visit him online at www.stressshooting.com. Peyton, like I said, it's always great to have you on here, and this is a great topic, and one that so many people are interested in, and actually probably just as many people that don't realize how important this topic really is. And that's what I'm looking to do tonight, is really open people's eyes to a different level of training that they're not used to, or maybe something that they know is a practical reality that they have to face, but don't really know how to deal with it. And we're talking about stress shooting, which is a specialty of yours and a specialty of your course. Now, I want to tell everybody before we get started here, right off the bat, that I want you to stick around to the very end, because there's a special thing that's happening, and the reason why we're doing this course, or why we're doing this broadcast, is because my good buddy Peyton is now in his 60s, and he's looking to get out of the game when it comes to the workshops that he's been putting out at his RAMCAT facility. And it was actually really saddening for me to get the email that he put out to his subscribers that he was about ready to do his very final course out in the Rocky Mountains. Now, I've been to this course before. In fact, last year we took a whole group of ISCQC members, and we went out there as a group and trained. I think there were about 14 of us out there, and had just an amazing time. But the thing is that we had people that were everywhere from my 16-year-old son all the way up to people who were operatives in Afghanistan and Iraq. And it didn't matter. Everybody started there on the same level, and if you were a beginner, you got all the training that you needed in those 3 days to deal with adrenal stress and effectively and be able to fight through it and to be able to shoot through it and make those decisions. But even the people that you would say are more experienced and are more experienced, the operatives from Iraq, the special contractors, these guys learned so much, and everybody left there saying this has been the best course they've ever taken, and they've been to tons of courses. So it really did sadden me to hear that these courses were coming to an end. And you're going to notice if you're looking there on the broadcast page that there is a link, there's a Register Now button on that page, and it's at the very, very bottom. And that will take you over to sign up for Peyton's course. So that is part of why we're doing this broadcast tonight, is because I want you to sign up for this course. This is going to be the last chance you're going to be able to do so, and you're definitely missing out if you don't go to this course. Now, it's coming up at the end of the month. We're going to talk a little bit more about it at the end of the broadcast, but you're going to find out as we talk about this topic just why Peyton has become so pivotal within this industry for this type of training, and why you don't want to miss the training. So give us the next 45 minutes or so to prove to you why this is such a great topic and why Peyton is the person to train you. And please take my advice and sign up for the course. In fact, I have a special message for you at the very end of this call that you're going to want to hang on to as well that has to do with the course. So hang on for that. Now, Peyton, I'm going to go ahead and jump right into all of this, because a lot of people really aren't familiar with maybe the term stress shooting or what we even mean by it when it comes to training for adrenal stress or adrenal response. So let me ask you right off the bat, why is training for shooting under stress so critical in your opinion?
Because it's the only thing you can count on in any self-defense situation. But think about it. If you're going to take a firearm and fire bullets through another human being's body and kill them, although your intent is to stop them and save your life, that's a high-stress situation. There's no question about it. It's physiological. It doesn't have to do with what most people consider fear. It goes beyond that. There are two levels of the mind, the self-aware mind and the amygdala. The amygdala pops up and usurps your self-aware mind when, and it only does this when it thinks the organism is in danger of being killed. Every animal has it, but we have so much self-awareness, our training can fail us because the amygdala takes over, that frog brain, as it used to be called. Now, consider this. If you had to pull out your gun, someone breaks into your house, or whatever the situation is that legally justifies you're using potentially lethal force, well, all the adrenal effects are going to be there. And we'll get into specifically what those are. But the main thing I want to get across right off the bat is, no matter how long people have trained, gone to the range, or taken other firearms courses, when a real person has to be shot, that's going to be probably the first time they even pointed a gun at another human being, much less pulled the trigger. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like a target. It's a human breathing, moving human being. So the whole idea of training is to simulate as authentically as possible the actual events and biochemistry of the event being trained for, in this case, being attacked where you have to use a gun to defend yourself.
Well, let me go ahead and jump in here, because I'm going to go ahead and play devil's advocate, because I'm sure there's a lot of people, you know, I mean, it's typical of a lot of gun owners. I mean, we want to feel confident with our firearm. We want to know that what we're doing is enough. I mean, it's unsettling to think we're not doing enough. That's the whole reason why we train, is because we want to master the skills that we need to protect ourselves and our family. So, the standard way of training is going down to the range and putting rounds down range and making sure you're as accurate as possible with your firearm. So isn't putting thousands of rounds down range of targets enough to at least program yourself for instinctive firing, so that when you actually have to pull your gun out on a home invader or on an attacker, that, you know, all those rounds that you sent down range at that target are, I mean, that should be instinct by then, right?
No, I have to say it certainly is not. There certainly is benefit in that. But what the range teaches you is marksmanship on targets, paper targets and such. So you can, at the range, develop your target shooting skills there. I mean, breath and tear control, holding the weapon steady, all that, target shooting skills. But none of those skills are involved in using a pistol for self-defense as a rule. In fact, you can't even use the sights of the pistol in almost every self-defense situation where you have to use a gun, a pistol, to shoot someone and stop them from killing you or serious injury.
Well, you realize that flies in the face of what a lot of people believe. I mean, even when they're going down to the range, what are they doing? They're pulling up their gun, they're getting the sights on target, and they're shooting to make sure that they get, you know, that they're hitting their target as accurately as possible. So let's address that, because for you to say you're not going to use your sights really is a in direct contrast of what a lot of people believe that they're going to be focusing on in a real life firefight.
The fact is they cannot focus on them because the amygdala takes over, and that biochemistry takes over, and it will not allow you to look at anything but the thing that's about to kill you. I've been doing this for 20 years, and a person could come in with a very fine and sequential and logical argument of why sighted fire is the only way to go in a real situation. But it only takes one scenario with the gun in their hand against the assailants, and they reverse their position 100%. They realize they can't use the sights. Most shootings occur first at under 7 feet, many under 5 feet. They occur in low light. That alone is enough to question how much marksmanship you need. But it's the physiological thing of you're not justified in shooting somebody unless they're about to kill you or seriously injure you. If that is the case, then you're going to be fully adrenalized, and your eyes are going to be wide, your hands are going to be shaking, and you can't look at the sights and line them up because you can't look away from the thing that is trying to kill you.
Well, I can speak from experience here, because when we went out to your training course, I mean, the very first thing we do is we go through an unexpected live scenario that happens. And, you know, we had a bunch of people there that, well, a few at least that I know of, that were probably some of those people that thought, no, the only way to accurately engage your target is using your sights. And at the end of the exercise, when people were attacked in simulated scenarios, everybody said the same thing. You asked the question, so how did those front sights help you out there? And invariably, everybody said the same thing. What front sights? I never saw the front sights. Because even if your exercises that you're not going to die. Nobody's going to actually kill you at the RAMCAP facility. So that's not even the full-on somebody's coming at you, they're about ready to literally stick a knife in your throat. Like, that's a whole other level. So even at that high range that you have, it's just not possible. Nobody, not one time, was able to use the front sights to engage their target. It just doesn't happen.
Exactly. And you say you know it's a scenario, and you know it's a scenario, and you know you can't be killed or injured, but that's all in your self-aware mind. But once that adrenaline hits you, you are ping-ponging between the amygdala, the non-self-aware mind, and your self-aware mind.
Yeah,
but the amygdala is pretty much under control. So even if you've been trained to shoot a lot and use the sights, when that adrenaline hits you, your amygdala has not been trained to use the sights.
Exactly. So what we're talking about are the involuntary experiences that your body has, the involuntary reactions that your body has to stress, that take over, that take you out of your self-aware mind and put you into lizard mind. You know, as
lizard mind.
So let me ask you, for everybody to understand, because they've typically not been adrenalized from the standpoint of a violent type of a scenario. Some people have, and they probably will recognize some of these things. But I want to know from you, what are those physiological effects specifically that someone can expect to see or feel when adrenalized in a dangerous encounter?
Well, let me give them in sequence, and then let's look at each one of them and what it really means in terms of using a firearm in a real situation. The first is tunnel vision. Your peripheral vision falls away. Guy pulls a knife, it's the biggest knife in the world, and that's all you see. too, loss of fine motor control. A lot of martial arts people think they're going to do their fine martial arts techniques, but when they get adrenalized against the armored assailant, they realize they cannot. So things like trigger pull, that's a fine motor skill, motor control. Three, auditory exclusion. Your hearing shuts off. Many police have fired heavy frame revolvers in small rooms at felons. And after they do their report, they say, you know, I didn't even hear the gun going off, even though they may have had hearing damage from firing the weapon. They always say, though, I felt the gun buck in my hand. Often they say, I just heard pop, pop, pop. Auditory exclusion. Four, tachypsyche. This is the technical term used for this. Tachypsyche is when things seem to start to move in slow motion. If you've ever been in combat or an automobile accident or seen your kid fall off the jungle gym and suddenly frame, 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 it all seems to be happening in slow motion. So the effects are tunnel vision, loss of fine motor control, auditory exclusion, and tachypsyche. Now, tunnel vision, your peripheral vision is cut off. You may not even see a second attacker off to the side. We see this a lot in scenarios. They shoot the one guy, but the other guy, who's only 5 feet to the left or the right, they never even see him. Your visual cortex enlarges the size of the enemy's weapon, and you tend to tunnel into it. This is all you normally can see. Your lower brain, your non-self-aware brain, tunnels into that. When I used to have a liquor store, had armed robberies. One in particular, the cop came in, and I chose cooperation as my best survival strategy, except once. And he said, well, how were they armed? It was a Mossberg Model 500, cut down to maybe 16 inches. Bluing was up. He says, what the fuck? And I go, what? He says, I've been taking these reports for X number of years, and all people say when I ask him what was the knife, what was the gun, they say, it was the biggest knife I ever saw. It was the biggest gun I ever saw because it's enlarged tunnel vision. The main thing about tunnel vision can be broken through training to some extent, but tunnel vision is another reason you can't use the sights because you can't not look at the person trying to kill you or his weapon. My real mentor on all of this, I have my own experience, but nothing like the late Jim Cirillo, who, yeah, to my knowledge, has been in more gunfights as a New York City detective back in the old 60s days. And we talked about this extensively. And he said, no, I don't remember using the sights at all. And in one situation, he killed three men, boom, boom, boom. They had a hostage, shot him all in the head. And, you know, you would think he would aim the pistol so as not hit the hostage. But none of us are going to be a Jim Cirillo. None of us are going to have that depth of experience where we get used to it like that.
At least you hope so.
I sure as hell hope so.
I don't, yeah.
So tunnel vision is one. Loss of fine motor control is another one. You can't perform fine motor skills like applying pressure to the trigger or holding your breath or holding the gun steady. Those are fine motor skills. And here's something, too. If you've ever taught somebody to shoot for the first time, the tendency is for most people to shoot high. That is the general tendency. The general tendency for somebody who's not used a firearm before, he shoots too high. But what we've observed over the last 20 years under adrenal stress training is when they grab their gun and pull it out, they're more likely to pull the trigger prematurely before the gun is all the way up on the enemy. That's the most common error made first few scenarios, which is just the reverse of teaching someone to hit a target or shoot a target. So now, you know, So trigger control and breath control, these are important to master in target shooting, but they really don't apply too much to using a firearm in an adrenal stress situation. And if you have to shoot somebody, there's no question but you're going to be adrenalized. Auditory exclusion. Your hearing is shut off or greatly reduced in sensitivity. This is because under the influence of the adrenaline hits you, the amygdala takes over and switches the processing power of the brain from the processing the audio information, the sound, to processing to the visual cortex, and so that you can see faster. You can process the visual data faster because you're using the neural nets that ordinarily would be used to detect and decipher sound. Okay?
Your body really goes into protection mode. I mean, it's doing all of this on its own in order to save your ass, basically. And
yes,
in the process, it's shutting down some of the extra systems to be able to give more power to those systems that have a better chance of helping you react faster, like your visual cues and things like that. So, I mean, when we took a look at, if you pile all of these together, because everything that you just went through is not going to be like, okay, some of you are going to, you know, experience loss of hearing, some of you are going to have tunnel vision. No, all of this is happening at the same time with everybody. It's a natural response to stress. And so when you think about how that really affects your ability, so if you think about how accurate you are and how fast you can draw and how proficient you are down at the range, and you pull yourself out of that situation and you take away a lot of those things that made you proficient down at the range, the ability to use the sights, that you were able to quickly draw your weapon up to and get it on target before you pull the trigger, you were able to get the proper breathing down, the proper trigger squeeze down, everything that lines up just perfectly down in the range and makes you a superstar, forget it. Forget it. Once you're in a home invasion and somebody is charging at you through the door and you're able to get out your weapon, you may not even get the chance to get it up to level, or your fine motor skills of being able to sideswipe the couch or whatever is going to go out the window. You're going to lose your peripheral vision. You're going to get tunnel vision. So you might not even see the couch that you just trip over because your self-aware mind isn't going to remember that you have a couch there. So there's all these things that can happen that a lot of people really don't maybe necessarily understand or put into a practical light with their training because they're just not used to training with that kind of adrenalized setup. So let's start to put some techniques and some strategies together to help some people, now that they understand this process, that we can overcome this. So the first thing I want to ask you is, are there any ways to reverse these adrenal factors that are involuntary? Are there ways? I mean, obviously Jim Cirillo did it by going out, being a street cop, and adrenalizing himself over and over again to the point where he became, you know, I guess expanded his comfort zone, if you want to call it comfort zone.
Well, he's been in more than a dozen individual gunfights where, as close as I recall, 16 felons were shot and killed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we're going to have that experience.
No, I don't think so. So when it comes to the physiological effects, are there ways that people can help to reverse some of these effects so they're not so overwhelming when they're in an attack? Is there any tricks, tips, tactics that somebody can do to help bring that adrenal response down?
Again, I'm going to have to say that since the adrenal response is a physiological one, like any drug, the more you're exposed to it, the more you experience with it, the less it dominates you. Or even we can use a heroin addict. He takes a hit of 3 cents of Mexican junk and he falls asleep. But 3 months later, he'll have to take 5 times that much just to feel normal because he's been repeatedly exposed to it and his body has adjusted to it. So to my knowledge, the only way to control and use that adrenal rush is through proper training that engages that adrenal rush. But let me, but just to give you an idea of what people can do to train at home, and there's really, there's no substitute. I'm not the only one doing this. I have been doing it for more than 20 years, but now there's a few places I think that are doing scenario-based adrenal stress training with firearms. But let's get back to that idea of it's the first time. If you somebody breaks in your house or you have to shoot somebody, for most people, that's going to be the first time they drew a weapon and pointed it at another human being. Well, the idea of training is to make it not be like the first time because you did it before in training, you see? Mm-hmm. But target shooting doesn't do that. Now, here's a progression we go through, stress shooting. Now there are laser cartridges that when the hammer hits the firing pin, they fire a laser for a tenth or a hundredth of a second, but it's not enough for you to correct it, so it flashes. We start people out, no matter what their experience level is, with the laser cartridge weapons. And we put paper plates on the side of the wall and number them 1 to 6 and let them practice on their own for a while, not using the sights. And after a short period of time, they realize they can hit the paper plate immediately when they draw the gun with a laser pretty much in the center without using the sights. You have to have confidence in your ability before you can have a chance of using it under adrenal stress.
Okay, so that's one thing right there that people can do is to gain more confidence by putting themselves in situations that maybe are, you know, will help them to recreate the adrenal stress.
Well, there's another part to the drill.
Okay.
Once they hit the paper plates and know they can do it, the plates are numbered. Now I shout out 3, 7. See what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just that little bit of not doing it their own volition, but doing it when I give the command and the number, they pull off target a little bit. That disturbs their aim. Before they were hitting boom in the center every time, when they were doing it their own volition, even though they were doing it quickly. But when I call out 7, 3, they get a little more discombobulated. There are two kinds of drills we have. One is experiential. It just allows you to experience something. The other is technique-based. It teaches you how to do something. Nobody looks for a solution to a problem until they realize it actually exists and that problem actually exists. Most people don't really understand that the adrenal reaction is going to dominate your behavior in any combat situation, and especially if it's the first time you're not properly trained for it. So they train on things that are not directly relevant to the
right.
actual event of self-defense use. So,
right.
All right, now that's one. Put up the paper plates, get the laser cartridge, go online and go laser training cartridge. You'll find a number of people who have them. Don't pay more than $45 for one. They come in 9mm, 45 auto, and a few others. Now, if you have a striker-fired gun, you'll only get the one shot. If you have a conventional double-action automatic, you will each time you pull the trigger, the laser will fire. Now, once you hit the plates, have your buddy say 3, 4, like that, and see how that affects you. Then have him close his eyes and then come up behind him, shove him, and that's his signal to open his eyes and start shooting the plates. You will see that all of these things have a great effect on his ability to hit the targets. But in a short period of time, they can also, at this level, be overcome. And even when you get pushed, bam, 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 you hit them. But, of course, we're only at a very low level of adrenal stress. But you have to have some level of adrenal stress. I remember I was with a guy who was in the shooting range with booths, you know, that were bulletproof to the next guy, and he was drawing pretty fast. He's a law enforcement officer, and I said, "Okay, close your eyes. You'll know when to fire." And boom, I hit him in the back and knocked him forward. And he still was shooting combat accurately. That is, he was still putting the bullets in the center of mass, let's say a 6 or 8 inch circle. But before, he was firing fast, and you could cover his shots by a quarter. You must prepare for that adrenal stress. And it also, and especially in a hand-to-hand fight, the adrenaline can be your best friend, too. I've mentioned the negative effects of adrenaline, but there are some positive ones, too. Well, tachypsyche is one of them. You see faster. But your blood actually clots faster when there's adrenaline in your system. That is, your bleeding stops quicker if it's, you know, not an arterial or something like that. Also, your tolerance to pain jumps tremendously. I was shot once in the leg, didn't even know it, because I thought the guy had kicked me in the leg. It was a light caliber pistol, though, very light caliber pistol. Hit the pavement, bounced up, hit me in the shin. Your tolerance to pain is enormous. Your speed and strength is increased. In a hand-to-hand fight, if you can learn to harness that adrenaline, and rather than being overcome by it, that's a tremendous asset. When using a tool like a handgun or a shotgun, the adrenal effects tend to be more negative, but they too can be overcome. And man is a tool user. If I'm fighting with my bare hands, something has already gone terribly wrong. You know, it's...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let me you know, I think one of the things, and I know you go over this a lot in the course, because there's the ability to stop your attacker with a firearm, but then there's the ability to be able to make that decision of where you're legally justified to even be able to shoot the weapon. That was a whole topic that we did an entire broadcast on before about legal justification. So we don't have to go into all of that, but here's where I think it really applies to what we're talking about. Because before a shot is even fired, you have to make that shoot, don't shoot decision. You have to be able to identify whether that threat is immediate and whether it's unavoidable. You know, all those things that we talk about as the legal self-defense test. Now, when you're under stress, this is a lot harder to do because you're not in that self-aware mind of being able to identify, okay, there's a guy, he's got a gun, he's 37 feet away, okay, now he's 21 feet away, now he's a threat, now I got to pull out my weapon. You're not in that self-aware mind to be able to make that step-by-step choice all the time. So what specifically can someone do to try to make the best possible and legal decision about defending themselves in an adrenalized situation?
Again, you have to train under adrenal stress. But here's what I always keep in mind. It just pops right into my head if I go into a city, and I don't often do that, and I don't often get any confrontations. But rarely it's occurred. The first thing I think of is this really a threat? What can I see his hands? Now that's another drill you can do at home. Watch hands. Do I see his hands? If I can see both his hands, then he hasn't got a weapon in them. But if his hand dives into a coat, and I'm looking at everything, his face, his eyes, the whole deal. Now, the things you have to have to use violence in your self-defense, whether it's legal violence or not, is a threat that is immediate, will cause you serious injury or death, and cannot otherwise be avoided. So when I see the guy's got no hands and all he's doing, you motherfucker, and all this shit, I take a deep breath and relax and keep my eyes on his hands. You see? Now, the other element of the law is, what would a reasonable man, knowing what he knew at the time, do and think? Well, that you got to look at that a little deeper. Let's say a guy's in a wheelchair, pulls out a knife. a reasonable man would think he could outrun the guy in the wheelchair, doesn't have to shoot it. So it's not otherwise unavoidable. On the other hand, suppose a guy is across the street, the length of a normal two-lane blacktop or driveway, and says, pulls out a knife, says, "I'm going to cut your head off, you bastard," and starts moving towards you. Well, in the course, we show that most people, from 25 feet away, a guy can pull a knife, run, and stab him with a rubber knife repeatedly before they can get their gun out and fire two shots in the center of mass. Most people don't even get their gun out in time to fire at all. Well, that changes the legal situation, doesn't it? Because if the guy's 25 feet away, pulls out a knife, says, "I'll kill you, motherfucker." Well, if you knew a person could cover 25 feet and stab most people before most people could get their gun out, that would be something you knew at the time and would fit into the reasonable man theory. You are more aware of the threat. Now, police are often criticized for shooting somebody who's 10 or 12 feet away or whatever, even 15 feet away, because he pulls out a knife. But police are trained to know that. They are trained to know that a person with a knife can cover that distance much faster than most people think. Yet in the papers, it might say, "Why did they have to shoot him? He only had a knife." Or that old thing, bringing a knife to a gunfight. Well, let me tell you, if the guy's weapon is concealed under his jacket or whatever, small of the back, under his coat and side, there's a good chance that guy with the knife will come out on top.
Well, and here's the thing, Peyton, because I always challenge these numbers, even the numbers sure. that you give. Because, you know, I can't say everybody, but people are aware of, like, the 21-foot rule, which was a test that was done a long time ago with a police officer with the gun in his holster, and a man with a knife from 21 feet away was able to effectively engage that officer. And so it was always known as the 21-foot rule.
Yeah, it was actually
total BS.
Got the name of the Tueller drill.
Yes, total BS. Because you have a person there, he knows that he's going to be attacked, so it's already a setup. The weapon is in its holster, so it's easily accessed. You're ready for this person to start charging. It was really just a relaxed reflex drill. In reality, and this is the thing that we learned at your training facility, 25 feet nothing. I'm talking 50 feet.
Yeah.
50 feet with a six-gun holster like you would have in the Wild West where you can get to it 50 feet away and you know that you're going to be attacked.
Right.
Most people still could not get the weapon onto the target.
And that's true. And if the Tueller drill showed that most of those cops couldn't get their gun out and pull the trigger either. There, of course, we teach you a way to survive such a scenario.
Right.
But
here's the point that I'm trying to make with all of this when it's related to stress shooting, is that the way that you overcome this, because you know the question was, you know, what can you really do to be able to make that shoot don't shoot decision? And the part of it is that you have to be able to recognize ahead of time. You have to be able to know ahead of time, as a reasonable man, of what your danger distance is and what those threatening actions might be. And in your course, I know you go through this, but you can test this even yourself at home. All you have to do is, if you are a concealed carry permit owner, put your weapon where you normally carry it, or if you want to really just, you know, make it super simple, just stick it right there on your hip, ready to be taken out. And then have one of your buddies start from 21 feet away, then 30 feet away, and 40 feet away, and 50 feet away. And when they feel like it, have them just charge at you, and then try to get your weapon out under those types of conditions. Now, obviously, I'm saying do this safely. So, use your loaded firearm.
Since you went there, Jeff, I've got, and we're not worried about the legal liability. You've got to make sure that weapon is empty.
I'm going to say airsoft. I just have to play it safe because I get people yell at me even if I say like dry fire training or you know. Double, triple check it, have your wife come in and check it for you, then stick a rope in it, then people still yell at you like you're never supposed to.
I know that. That's okay. So let me tell me, let me tell you a drill that I was introduced to, 38 years ago. And I had plenty of experience with firearms even then. And they can do it too, but it's it violates the first rule of gun safety.
Oh, no, you're not going to get me in trouble, are you?
No, I guess I'm not. Well, okay. I'll just give them the idea.
Okay.
Here's the idea. We don't recommend it.
Hold on. Let me give the disclaimer right now. The opinions of Peyton Quinn are not necessarily the opinions of this station, nor this broadcast, nor the ISCQC. Please listen at your own risk.
That's
okay.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay. Take your carry gun, empty it, take the magazine out, make sure there's nothing in the chamber, point it at a safe object, pull the trigger several times, make sure that gun is empty. Then put that gun in your normal carry way, whether it's smaller back, strong side, FBI cant, shoulder holster, whatever. Let no time expire of any significance, and don't take the weapon out of your sight after you have cleared it, etc., and pulled the trigger several times while pointing at a safe object to see that it does not fire, and then put it in your holster. Now have your buddy be, say, 10 feet away, and put a give him a rubber knife or something, and then have him say, "I'll kill you, motherfucker," or something like that. And your job is to draw and click on a dry chamber on your buddy. Let me tell you, some of you are going to discover you can't do it. You can't pull the gun out, point it at somebody, and pull the trigger. I've been doing this for 20-odd years, and I've seen several people who froze when they pulled the gun out, because they had been so conditioned by their previous training, safety training. But the basic rules, safety rules of using a firearm, are well drawn. And the idea of not pointing at anything you don't intend to kill or shoot is a good rule to live by. But it isn't an effective way to train people.
Well, you know, this is important, and we've never talked about this. I mean, I've interviewed you probably like 6 or 7 times. We've never talked about this, but you bring up a really important point. So we're trained. Okay, let me draw some parallel here. We're trained as kids never to, like, kick your brother in the balls. You know? That's just not the way that you fight. You don't do that. It really hurts. So in real fights, people hardly ever think of the groin as a target, even though it can be a very effective target, because our brain is programmed not to be able to do that. So in safety training, you're taught never do this, never point your gun at anybody, always assume it's loaded, never shoot at this target. That really, especially I guess the more that you're trained, the more that it programs into your mind, never point your gun at anybody,
exactly.
And don't pull the trigger because you're going to kill them. And we're so afraid of that. But here's the thing, is that when it comes time that you actually have to do that, doesn't that hold you back some as well? I mean, how many times have we seen videos of police officers with their gun out, pointing it at somebody who's attacking them, stop or I'll shoot, and they're getting attacked, stop or I'll shoot. And
yes, they are under constraint. I don't criticize an officer for doing that, but unless he gets himself killed.
No, but Peyton, what I'm talking about, I've been in combat before, and I know you're a Vietnam vet. You've been in combat. I've seen people not be able to pull the trigger at the enemy.
So well, I've seen that. This happened right in our training, and this guy was the pistol trainer for a fairly large city on the East Coast. And he had been doing it for years. And in his first scenario, he draws the gun and freezes and stops. And I blow the whistle, because you want to stop a scenario. You don't want to condition, because these things do condition you at a low level. You don't want a person to practice failure. So I asked him, I said, "This is the first time you've ever pointed a pistol at another human being, isn't it?" And he said, "Yeah." You see? And he had been teaching people to shoot on the range, other officers, for years. So there is an issue there. There definitely is an issue there. Let me run this piece of history by you. In World War II, only about 17% of the soldiers fired their weapons on Normandy Beach. The others hunkered down behind rocks, maybe moved up, okay? It's always 15% of the soldiers that do 85% of the killing of the enemy. That's even true in the Korean War, the first jet fighter battles. So after they found it, and there was an oral report, they got the guys, the Germans who were in the prison camps, and they found out what happened on a certain night in a certain place, and they got the Americans or British soldiers, and everybody told their story. Okay, it turned out that some of those guys hesitated to shoot too. But then they changed, so they came back and they changed the training methodology. Instead of shooting at targets aimed at 300 yards, laying on your belly prone, etc., they made the targets like silhouettes and at the closer ranges that modern combat occurs, about 100 yards or less. And they started teaching point shooting. Now the soldiers were shooting at something that just looked more like a human being than a target way off in the distance. When those guys who were trained in that got over to Korea, most of them did use their weapons when they were under attack immediately. So they took it one step forward. And this was called quick kill, principles of quick kill. Not everybody got this training, but they dressed the soldiers up in M65 flight jackets, M65 field jackets, their helmets with a visor, the riot control visor, and they gave them a Red Ryder BB guns. And one group wore red armbands and the other blue. And they cut out these channels, this maze in the dirt. And they just walked through this maze until they encountered each other and they shot each other with the BBs. Well, I don't want to belabor this, but this was so realistic, when they got over to Nam, they shot at anything that moved. You see, they were too promiscuous with their lead. So training method is everything in preparing somebody for the real thing. By using BB guns and the oh shit encounter, because they didn't see any enemy until you turned the corner, ooh, there they were, and then they both start shooting each other, see? Yeah. That was so realistic that they were a little too trigger happy.
Yeah. Well,
it doesn't have to go that far, though.
We've only got a little bit of time here, so I want to make sure we come up with some maybe some more practical strategies that people can use at home or at the range or whatever to be able to do this. So let me ask you. You know, one of the things we were talking about was when shooting your weapon under stress, your fine motor skills pretty much go out the window.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to accurately hitting your target, are there any skills that you can share with us for bettering our chances for that man-stopping hit? I know, you know, there's a lot of, I want to say controversy, I guess. And I don't know, I know why, but I'm going to leave it up to you to answer this, about point shooting, you know, mm-hmm. with aim shooting versus point shooting. We talked a little bit about this, but Lewis was on the line here from Missoula, Montana, and he said, how do you rebuke... I think he meant ASLET. It's American Society for Law Enforcement Trainers, devoted trainers who insist that point shooting is a hoax and say their department will never consider point shooting. So, you know, there's a lot of people who still mm-hmm. swear by their front sights. So,
sure.
You know, when it comes to accurately hitting your target, what skills can somebody use?
Well,
I don't want to get into the debate between one way or the other, because for me, you know, really, the people that say that point shooting is a hoax have
right.
never been, you know, had somebody charging at them from 30 feet away with a knife, and they realized
they never tried
that's
it
all
either.
They've got.
They never
exactly.
even tried point shooting at the range.
So tell people.
But his question was, how would I rebuke that police organization and their denial of point shooting? Very easily. Like the military, police police are an inherently conservative institution. They have to be, because they deal with situations that are somewhat akin to military, where you have a chain of command and structure, and the military is very slow to change their training methods. They're always fighting the last war.
Yeah.
So what happened to the French and the Maginot Line? But there's no question about it. It's not really an issue. Point shooting's all you're going to be able to do, period. The other element in the police situation is legal liability. And unfortunately, most city attorneys are more willing to risk the lives of their police officers than they are a multi-million dollar lawsuit against the city. You see, so they're tuned into this. Every shot is precisely aimed. We know where our bullet's going.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So let's talk about some of those skills. So teach people a little bit here about what they should do in an adrenalized state. Like, what skills can they help develop, or should they be practicing on at home to make them better at close quarters, adrenalized stress shooting?
Well, again, I think the laser cartridges will show you you can point shoot. I think if you can go to an outdoor range or something, or if you can just point shoot at your own range. And here's the technique. Now, let me digress a moment, but it's worth. Many people say, well, I don't point shoot, I just get flash sight picture. Well, every 15 years, the gun magazines will come up with a new thing to call it. I just call it point shooting. You're not using the sights. Well, try, when you look first, keep both eyes open. Look exactly in the center target where you want to hit it. And then bring up your gun, not looking at the sights, but interposing those sights in the line that, if your two eyes were a laser beam hitting the target in the center, when your gun came up, it would interrupt that laser beam. And that's when you drop the hammer. Think about that idea. Because if you're shooting a weapon, a pistol, you always bring it up to eye level. So everything that's happening there registers on your visual cortex. You're not focused on the rear sight, and you're not really focused on the front sight either. But that latent image is on your visual cortex. Then if your bullet hits the target, you're starting to develop hand-eye coordination. Now, it's just another way for a person to practice and discover that it distances out to 25 feet even. You don't need to aim the gun. And if my enemy is trying to line me up with his pistol, I've already killed him.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a very good point. So that gives you a little bit more of that advantage that you need to be able to react much faster.
Yeah, and the technique itself, I'll run through it quickly again. You're at the range or wherever you shoot. Imagine your two eyes are a laser beam. The laser beam is shining on what you want to hit. Then interpose the pistol. Jerk the pistol, bring it up there, and stop it. Some of the things are the same as martial arts, taking a sword. You bring the sword up, you stop it. You don't let its weight carry it. But try that. But the main thing is, if you learn you can point shoot, then you'll have more confidence and you'll be more likely to, in a crisis, hit somebody because all you're going to be able to use is point shooting.
Yeah. Well, you've given us some really, I was going to ask for some training drills, but you've been peppering this with training drills throughout. There's some really good ones in there. You know, one question I did have, you know, there's always the debate about what's the best firearm for mm-hmm. personal defense or whatever. Gotta love that debate. But there are some people that are just true revolver fans, and then there are others that, you know, are into semi-automatics. But does the adrenalized state and the loss of the fine motor skills and things like that, does it make a case for the semi-automatic over the revolver, in that if you have a revolver and you're limited to your six rounds or whatever, and you have to reload, without the with the loss of fine motor skills, trying to reload under stress can be difficult, even with speed loaders.
Right.
Does it make a case for semi-automatic where you might have 15, 17 rounds in a magazine that you don't have to worry about the reload?
Well, I'll repeat something people have heard before, but it's true. The best gun for self-defense is the one you have in your hand at the time you need it. That's all there is to it. Now, revolver versus auto. Auto has the quick reload and the firepower, more shots. But a revolver, and some the new Smith & Wessons have seven shots. But, you know, a lot of people are perfectly comfortable with a 1911 45 auto. But you've only really got seven shots in there, too, unless you got one in the chamber, which you usually would. So that 45 auto, which they'd feel perfectly at home with, doesn't carry any more ammunition than Smith & Wesson 7-shot revolvers. But that 7-shot 357 Magnum revolver is going to have more knockdown power. But it's what you shoot well with and feel comfortable with. If you don't feel comfortable with your weapon, if it's not like it fits in your hand, extension of your body, and you point it and you hit what you are pointing at immediately, you might want to try another weapon. Now, that's why we have so many different kinds of handguns. Some people just seem to naturally shoot better with a revolver than the auto.
Yeah.
Now, as far as reloading the revolver, even with speed loaders, that's a fine motor skill. You try it to do that under stress. You could train somebody to do that. As long as you train them under stress, but it is far more difficult than grabbing another mag from your kit, hitting the magazine release and slapping in another and hitting that slide release. However, with 6 or 7 shots, you should be able to terminate most conflicts that are ever going to come up.
Yeah.
And a revolver does have the advantage of simplicity. It can't jam in the way an auto can. Like for example, in the old days, I saw cops fucking use WD-40 on their revolvers, and the WD-40 would seep into the cartridges, and then a cartridge would misfire. Now they don't have that problem now, but the point is, with a revolver, if one bullet is a dud, you just pull the trigger again and you're hitting another bullet. With an auto, the whole cycle stops. You have to eject it.
All right. I'm sorry I brought it up. I'll be here for the next hour. And I'm going to get tons of hate mail from both sides. So.
Oh, I know.
Forget that I asked the question.
Well, people get attached to their guns. I'm a gun person, I guess.
I know. All right. So listen, everybody, there's some really good information here. First of all, I hope that you really understand the need for stress shooting skills to truly be prepared for a violent attack, and realize that just shooting down at the paper targets, down at the range, is not going to be enough to truly prepare you. Does it help? Yes. Is it going to be what you really need? Not ultimately, no, it's not really going to be. You need this kind of training in there, but it's really hard to find. I did this broadcast tonight because Peyton, if you're coming into the broadcast along the way, Peyton's stress shooting course is going bye-bye. He's retiring. He's going to ride across the country on his Harley with his wife on the back. He's going to come visit me out in Texas.
I'll have to do that.
Absolutely. That's on the calendar.
No, but, hell in Texas.
So definitely you want to take advantage of the last course that's coming up here. Now, I've been to the course, as I said before. We took a group of about 14 of the ISCQC members to the course last year, and it was phenomenal. So I want to explain just very quickly about what you can expect when you get there. It's a three-day course. You're doing
Actually, it's 4 days. It's three and a half days. That's right.
Okay, awesome. So you got 4 days. So what you're going to do is you're going to fly into Colorado in the beautiful Rocky Mountains.
Colorado Springs Airport.
Okay, and you're going to get picked up by Peyton, and everybody's going to get loaded off, and you're going to go off to his mountain retreat, his little his little bunker out there in the middle of the mountains, right next to the trout-filled stream, with deer on the property. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. You'll see pictures of the property out there. So if you're just looking to, like, get away from the television, the kids, the spouse, whatever, this is a great place as a an amazing spot to go. Now, you're not going to have to pay for a hotel or anything because you're right there on the property. Peyton has a really great Quonset Hut training area that also has bunks in there, the showers, the bathrooms, everything. It's set up kind of like a military area there, and so you've got everything that you need right there. He takes care of all of the meals and everything. In fact, once you get picked up there, the very first night is usually a barbecue at Peyton's with he and his wife out there just kind of bullshitting with everybody, and it's a lot of fun. Everybody kind of getting to know each other and just having a great time. You really do get connected with the people that come out there, and it's for all different levels. After that, as you start the training, you're going to start off understanding very quickly the effects of stress on the body, both the positive and the negative, by learning how stress affects your body firsthand, how to harness that to your advantage should you ever have to fight your way to your weapon or just fight, period, for
that
your
life. That is important, too, very important.
Yeah, and you'll be able to do this off going full force with padded up people. When was the last time you were able to strike somebody full force with your knee right in the nuts? Like, never. Well, at least
you can't learn to do it unless you can do it. Most people can drop a man if they drive that knee into the groin, hitting the testicles and pelvic girdle. But how can they learn how to do that by shouting in pajamas and kneeing at the air, you see?
Right. And the training that Peyton has uses padded people that are specially protected, that you can take a baseball bat to the nuts and it's not going to hurt. So that means you can go full force, you can really test. And it's not just a test for what you already know. They're going to teach you what really works in a hand-to-hand combat situation. And then you're going to go into the firearms phase after all of that training, and then you're going to get to shoot the weapons. You're going to be able to point a safe weapon at another person in several different types of scenarios, and you'll be able to develop, and you see yourself progress. You'll feel yourself progress as you go through all these different layers of the training. You'll feel yourself becoming more confident with your own skills, with your own firearm skills, with your own hand-to-hand skills. And here's the thing that for me was the most empowering, was that once you find this confidence, and really most people don't even really have this level of confidence and empowerment and self-confidence, but it carries with you far beyond any just being able to defend yourself against a violent attacker. It will make you better at work. It will make you a more confident speaker. I had a situation right after we came back from the course. There was a woman who my wife and I were out for a date. We were eating lunch at a local deli outside, and we were the only ones outside, and a woman came over and sat down at the table right next to us and was talking on the phone very loudly. I mean, she was just obnoxiously loud, and she was just dry. I mean, this was my date with my wife, and this woman was just, like, so obnoxiously loud. So I just stared at her, like, with this thousand-mile stare, and started repeating back, like, I was on the other side of the phone with her. It's like, mm-hmm, oh, really? Oh, yeah? And it's like my wife's looking at me like, who the hell are you? And it was like I wasn't being aggressive with the woman, but I was just, I knew from your training that this woman was woofing. She was just as much like a 300-pound, you know, gangbanger out there that's trying to intimidate you. This woman, just her persona, was very intimidating, and she made herself part of my space, and I didn't like it. And so I just confidently was able to send a message to her that you're a woofer, I won't accept being woofed on. And then she got up and she moved away. And it wasn't anything that there was confrontational or anything, but I felt so empowered and so confident, and I was able to create that space that I needed from that situation.
And to recognize that your space was being invaded, and indeed that was part of her intent and persona.
Right. And that translates to
not being in denial.
And a lot of people go into denial when they got somebody like a thug up in their face or somebody at the bar up in their face. You go into denial mode, like, well, this person, you know, they probably won't hit me. They probably will just leave me alone. I'll just won't say anything. No, you don't know that. And so this empowerment that you get from the type of training that you get at Peyton's Place is going to really hit you deep down in the core. It will even affect your dreams. Subconsciously, you will become more empowered and more confident. I promise you this. I've talked with guys after the course. They said the same exact thing. It hits you very, very deeply. So this is the last chance you're going to be able to take this course. As you're listening to me on the broadcast right now, you'll see that there's a button on the page that will take you over to Peyton's registration page. Now, you have to apply for this training. So you have to fill it out. It's not that you need to be some special ops black assassin. He just wants to make sure that you have the right mindset, the right frame of mind to come out there and be a valuable part of the training for everybody's benefit. That's all it is. So you just fill out the application form. Peyton will get it, give you a call, work it out with you, and you'll make sure that you're a part of this course. Now, here's what I'm going to throw in here as well, because I really believe everybody needs to take this course. So here's what I'm going to do. If you sign up for Peyton's course, for this last one, sign up for his course, take the program. What I'm going to do is I'm going to throw in a free one-year enrollment to the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants. That is about a $200 of a bonus right there, and I'm going to throw that in for free for anybody that goes to the course. We'll set you up with a platinum membership. You'll have access to all the training that we have, including the weekly broadcasts, the weekly training videos, free ebooks, free reports. All these things that we do within the ISCQC members area are going to be yours free for a full year at no cost. Now, it's only for the people that sign up for Peyton's last stress shooting course at the RAMCAT facility. So go ahead and take advantage of it using the button that you see on the page there to go over to his site. Now, I don't get compensated for this at all. I'm doing this because this training is freaking amazing, and I really want you to not procrastinate on this. I really want you to take advantage of it, okay? Now, while you're making that decision, while you're thinking about this, what I want you to do is we're going to open up to some Q&A right now.
Okay.
So if you're on the phones and you want to chime in by phone, all you have to do is press *2 on your handset, and it'll raise your hand on my computer screen, and I'll be able to call on you from there, and I'll unmute your phone, and you can be able to ask your question live. If you have a question about the training out at the RAMCAT facility, you can ask that too. If you have any questions about point shooting, or if you have any questions about stress shooting, anything that you want to ask is totally fine. This is an open forum right now. You're able to ask any question. If you're on the phone, and I always like to give precedence to people that are on the phone, just press *2 on your handset. That will raise your hand on my end. I'll go ahead and unmute you, and I'll call on you, and you can undo it. If you are listening in via the webcast, all you have to do is submit your question through the form that you see on the page or you're listening right now. That'll come through on our end, and we can ask those questions here. So, again, if you're on the phone, I always like to give precedence to those people. Again, press *2, and that'll raise your hand over here. Now, just to go to some people that submitted some questions on the form, Dr. J from Dallas asked, does the use of a laser that's integrated on the pistol better enable point shooting? That's a good question. I mean, a lot of people are interested in adding a laser to their pistol for low light shooting or to be able to better target. Does the laser help when you're looking at point shooting? I mean, obviously you're not going to be using your front sight anyway. So do you personally find that lasers can be helpful for more accurate stopping?
I would say in general, yes. But for some people, no. Most people, yes. But I've tried this. I've done experiments with it. And some people are searching for the laser when they should be pulling the trigger. But in other words, if you're going to use a laser, practice with it realistically as well. In what light can you see that laser? You can't be looking for any light or any laser spot under stress that's going to slow you down. You're trying to use two parts of your brain that generally don't work together. But like anything, if you practice it realistically with a laser, it can be a help. I have a laser on my AR-15, for example. The green lasers can be seen in almost any light.
Yeah. I have some interesting questions that are coming in here via the thing. So here's one.
I have a thick hide, people who can ask me anything.
Here's an interesting one. This is from Antonio from California. Do you believe violent video games desensitize kids to built-in aversion to shooting humans? I mean, I think why I find this interesting, just in the context of our conversation, is that, you know, somebody might ask or might think that violent video games, where you're a first-person shooter, in other words, all you see is the gun in front of you on the screen, and or even if you go to the arcade where you're actually holding the gun and you're shooting people or zombies that are coming after you, is that a form of, I mean, obviously you're not really adrenalized, but is it helpful at all for scenario-type training, be able to shoot, don't shoot, know there's a hostage there, or, you know, reflex action when somebody jumps out from behind a table and shoots at you or whatever?
Well, first, I believe the question was phrased, do these video games desensitize kids to actual killing? Well, frankly, I would say yes, but that's only going to have any real effect on a fraction of 1% of them. Two, yes, these kids are adrenalized when they play these games. I've done not really a controlled study, but you know those things I had, that measure your heartbeat and your blood pressure that put on your wrist? I don't know if we used those in your wrist.
No.
Yeah, they get into it. They're locked into it. So I don't think playing those games is going to negatively affect but one kid in 1,000. But, yeah, I don't think it's healthy. It's just like the Oro experiment and making the targets more human and then going to the BB guns with the M65 flak jackets. Now, when they got over in country, they were too promiscuous with their shooting. You see what I mean? They, when in doubt, toss a frag or spray. So
yeah.
I think it's, yes, you can be desensitized.
Yeah.
I hate to admit it and spoil my macho image, but I have a graduate degree in psychology as well.
Thought
I'd get that out.
You blew out my picture of you.
I can both read and write.
There is some question about the training, and I guess we didn't really go over it very much as far as, like, what is the training cost? What are the dates of the training? And can you give us a little bit more of the kind of logistics of it?
You arrive May 31st, ideally before, say, 3 p.m. at the Colorado Springs Airport. We pick you up and take you here. It's about an 80-minute drive through the forests and mountains, quite scenic. We give you your room. Friday night, we just get to know each other. We eat. And then, you know, everybody gets to know each other, we relax. Then we have your first adrenal woofing exercises that Friday night. Then you have a sleep cycle. Those neural nets begin to, you have those dreams he was talking about. Then the next day, we get up, we eat breakfast, and we start with the armored assailant hand-to-hand training. And about half of the course is on de-escalation, understanding the criminal and predator mind, how it thinks, and when you're being what I call interviewed for victim potential and how to deal with that in a way that makes them not choose you as an attractive victim. There's only three ways you can respond to people, to aggression: fear, anger, or assertiveness. Only assertiveness is a choice you make in your self-aware mind. Fear and anger are biochemical. They're just knee-jerk reflexes and generally will not serve you. So half the course is on de-escalation. Then you have your first fights. Now the guy's got the armor on. He might come out there and maybe say, hey, man, you got a dime, man. All I want's a dollar. And you've got to deal with this. He may, most likely, he's going to attack you, but not always. And by this time, you would have gone through these scenarios without the armor. We teach gross motor skills only, no fancy martial arts techniques.
So it's not like a sparring exercise. This
is not at all.
Make the decision.
A fight has to be one way, and real fights are over in seconds.
Yeah.
It has to be one way, your way. The main techniques are the knee to the groin, the forearm to the face, the heel of palm to the face. Those are the main techniques, gross motor skills, not fancy.
Very simple to master, even if you've never taken any course before at all.
Yeah.
It really doesn't matter. So I don't want
to be surprised at your power, because you can actually hit somebody. There's no better way to learn how to knock somebody off their feet than knocking somebody off their feet. Then you know you can do it.
Right. Let me interject a little bit here, because I want first of all, I want you to know this is, I know a bunch of people are asking, can women come to this as well?
Oh, definitely. I encourage women to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so I want you to also know these the trainers that are with Peyton's team are top notch. They're not, you know, they're not egomaniacs. They're not trying to beat anybody up. They're not trying to. They truly know how to empower people and make it very, very valuable to you. Where you know when you get done with this course that you're prepared for anything that you can that will come your way. So very, very professional people. I don't want you to be intimidated by the word fight, like your first fight. The fact is, it's all a completely safe environment. There's no embarrassment. In fact, everybody is cheering everybody on. In fact, they're part of the process of you programming, being programmed to be able to respond appropriately. So while you're fighting, your other people are going to be cheering you on, like, knee, knee, knee. So they're going to see from a distance, like, what your best technique is. I mean, when you're locked up in with somebody, that padded attacker, you don't always, like, you might not see the opportunities because you're adrenalized. So the people that are watching are going to be coaching you. They're going to see, like, this person's groin is wide open. They're going to be yelling, knee, knee, knee. And you're going to hear that resounding voice in your head, and all of a sudden you're going to respond with that knee. And then this guy's going to crumple down in front of you. So
you're right. And that prints on your subconscious mind.
Exactly.
How PTSD works, actually. So, I've had women who said, well, when he grabbed me, I'd move my ass out of the way, slapped him in the groin, he went over, I kneed him in the face, and then he didn't even try to get up once. In other words, oh, yeah, and she said, and I heard the whole class cheering. Of course, she was alone in the parking lot. But you'll really learn something about how the mind works when you get down to this very basic level. And as Jeff said, I wouldn't have done it for 23 years if it were just about self-defense. That has to be accomplished. But to me, self-defense training is a subset of self-improvement. And I don't know any more powerful self-improvement than this course, really. You can walk over hot coals and such, but, there's something to that, but we're going a lot further than walking over hot coals.
What's the cost of the course, Peyton?
It's $9.95, including all your meals and lodging and transportation to ground transportation to and from Colorado Springs Airport. And if anybody wants to just email me directly, it's Peyton, P-E-Y-T-O-N-Q, the numeral 1, at gmail.com.
And that's Peyton's personal email address. Peyton's always been very personal, and he takes a real investment in the people that come to these. I mean, he's very vested in you being successful at this, and everybody walks away really empowered by it. So that's his personal email address. If you have any questions at all about this, so it's all inclusive. Remember, you're not going to have to pay for a hotel and meals and things like that. Everything is taken care of for you once you get out there, including traveling to and from the facility, as well as all the meals and the bunkhouse and everything. So you're good to go there.
I think the food's pretty good, too. What do you think, Jeff?
Absolutely, yeah. All right, we've got a few people that are on the phone right now, Peyton, so I want to go ahead and call on a few people here.
Yeah.
We've got from Mount Albert, Ontario. We're calling from Canada. Are you there on the line?
Yes. I'm just calling to see. I took Peyton's course a couple of years ago, and it's probably the best investment, $1,000 or so, say $2,000 with transportation, that you can make. It is much more impressive than Peyton's able to convey in a in a telephone conversation or a webcast.
Yeah.
I've been in martial arts for over 4 years, and there is something worthwhile there for everybody.
Great.
Thank you, sir.
Really appreciate your comments. And he brings up a really good point, because when you think about it, the cost, if you should ever find yourself in a shoot, don't shoot decision where you actually have to make a decision to shoot, and you don't make the right decision because you didn't receive this type of training where you have to make under stress the decision whether or not to pull a trigger. If you pull the trigger and you're not supposed to, you're not legally justified, what's it going to cost for the attorney fees? What's it going to cost to you in the loss of time with your family, with that trauma, with going to prison and not being there for your kids, your grandkids' birthday party? That's not a scare factor. That is absolute reality, folks. Because the fact is, you do not have to have committed a crime in order to go to prison. You could be trying to defend yourself, but all it takes is one thing that you didn't do right that the prosecuting attorney can show that you were in the wrong, and you might not be going home with your family. What's that going to cost? There's no money in the world that's going to bring back the loss of a family member that was hurt or died because of a shooting incident that you weren't prepared for because the adrenaline kicked in, took over, and those paper targets weren't enough for you to be able to make the right decision tactically to be able to defend yourself. So I want you to really understand that as far as I'm concerned, every member of my family and my own life is worth much more than $1,000. And I tell you, that's cheap for this type of training, and especially with everything being included in it. So please take advantage of this course. Again, I'm throwing in an extra $200 for a one-year full membership to the ISCQC for everybody that attends the course.
Very generous of you, Jeff, and I do appreciate it.
I believe in it, brother. I believe in it. So I want everybody to take advantage of it. I got another caller here from, it says Chapin Little Mountain, South Carolina. Hello?
Chapin,
I'm sorry.
Carolina.
I screwed up.
That's okay. That happens often.
What can I do for you?
But my name is Ron.
Hi, Ron.
You mentioned earlier that in an adrenalized situation that your concentration is on the weapon that the person is carrying, and it looks huge.
Your visual, that's what you're looking at. That's what
the visual. Is it ever possible that your focus can shift to the center mass of that person? I mean, let's say that person breaks into your bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and you happen to have your gun in, say, like a holster that
mm-hmm.
you happen to have at your bed. You have one of those that you have that
yeah,
a bedside holster.
I know, yeah.
And you happen to have it there.
Well, it's probably going to be dark, right?
It's probably going to be dark. Yeah.
So you may not see his weapon.
Yes, you may not see his weapon, but you may see the silhouette of his body.
Well, if you see a silhouette of his body, fire towards center of mass. However, you can do look at your own state law, too. Go on the net, put your state in. There are duty to retreat.
Well, South Carolina is one of those states that is...
Castle Doctrine.
It's what now?
You have a Castle Doctrine, I believe.
I'm sorry?
The laws favor the homeowner.
Yes, sir.
Right. So
yes, sir,
don't, I
most
think
people
I
breaking into your home aren't
your
there
question.
For a social visit.
Yes, I think I understand that the focus of your question is if you can only look at the weapon, how can you shoot towards center of mass?
Yes, sir. That's my question, exactly.
Yeah, that's not a problem, really, because it's going to happen so close, you're not going to be able to use the sights. You're going to jerk that thing out and start and firing towards center of mass. I understand your question, and it's like some martial arts things, ingenious solutions to non-existent problems. This is not really a problem. And I'll tell you something else that will surprise you. Most people who are shot stop the attack, not because they can't continue, but because they don't want to be shot again. That's after looking at so many shooting incidents, I have to make that conclusion. Of course, there's always psychos on PCP or something. They're not going to stop to your stop until you blow their head off.
Right. You see, and I've got a Smith & Wesson 9mm. Now,
mm-hmm.
there's so many knocks on a 9mm that, you know, they say it doesn't have the stopping power, it doesn't have this, that, whatever. And I just don't believe that.
Well, here's the thing. The Army went from the 45 ACP to the 9mm. Geneva Convention means you cannot use expanding ammunition. The 45 ACP is moving at 850 feet per second, not really sufficient to make expanding ammunition reliably expand. Your 9mm is probably moving at between 1150 and 1275, depending on what load you're using. That's fast enough to make expanding ammunition expand. So I keep a 9mm, a 92F, and soft-point ammunition. Smaller caliber guns benefit most by soft-point ammunition. All major manufacturers' ammunition performs about the same.
Yeah,
but I would
say, we ran tests on this, and if you have the Bulletproof Defense DVD, we actually did a shooting test on hydrostatic pressure with a 9mm, and it definitely expands the ammunition. I mean, it has good hydrostatic response and is a valuable man stopper. In fact,
It's manageable.
Right.
I got it, because it was my first handgun, and I thought, you know, if I had to, first of all, it's got high capacity. It's a 15+1.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured most home invasions, it's not going to be just one person. There's going to be like three or four. And a 45 ACP, you've got like seven. And if you miss a couple of times, now you're down to like three or four rounds, and now you
that's logical.
Now they're on you. Now they're on you, and you're done. You know, and usually in a home invasion, there's one person that's controlling your family, your other people. That's the person you got to take out first.
Yes, you always take the leader out first, but they have to get in first.
Yes.
And, so that's the thing. When you go to answer your door, that's your most vulnerable time.
Yeah, and I had that experience one time. My daughter answered the door before she even knew who it was, and Lord, scared me so bad. It just happened to be that it was somebody that was not a threat.
You know, nowadays, for $100, you can buy a video door thing. I've got one. I can see who's at my front door without even going down there. And they're easy. You can install them yourself. They're not expensive. They give you a lot of peace of mind because you know what's behind that door before you open it.
Yes.
Now, if I saw three guys I didn't know behind the door and studied them carefully and decided now they are up to no good, I would certainly have my weapon in my hand. Since I don't have to worry about over-penetration, I'd pick up the AK. But then I just call the police.
Yes. Yeah, AK is going to be my next purchase. I've got a Mossberg 500 also.
Let me say this. If you have neighbors, that AK round can go through your wall and hit a neighbor's house. So over-penetration.
Yeah, well, I don't have to worry about neighbors.
Good.
I live out here in the boonies, so I don't have to worry too much about that. It's just the other members of my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the rooms in the house. So
you should have a drill and have a set of rules. Here's where we go under these circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great.
But
all right, well, I'm going to go ahead and move on to some other questions, but I appreciate you chiming in. Awesome.
Yeah, it's just the other members of my family think I'm paranoid.
Well, like Henry Kissinger said, even paranoids have enemies.
Excuse me?
Henry Kissinger said, even paranoids have enemies.
Okay, thank you.
Well,
I appreciate that.
Harry, take care.
Thank you.
Okay, again, if you're on the phone and you have a question, all you have to do is press *2 on your handset, and you'll be able to ask your question of Peyton. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go over back to the some of the questions that came in here. Is there a source for the laser training cartridge? Yeah, we just purchased some. I don't remember the company, but you can just Google laser training cartridge for handgun,
yeah.
And there's some really good providers out there.
Laser Light is one of them.
LASERLYTE. Yeah, I think that's where we got ours. Here's a question from Shirley from Boston. She actually put in a few here. It's like which, whoops, I just lost it. Hold on one second. She was asking what was the best, what's the best gun or rifle that she can buy. She's a woman who wants to protect herself and her family. What do you recommend for buying a gun or rifle if I can't purchase a gun or rifle in Boston?
Uh-huh.
Even if I have a permit to purchase a rifle. So she's wants to know, in fact, she had another question, which gun or rifle do you suggest is the best gun for a woman that has less recoil when you shoot, so that you don't feel the pressure so much of firing the weapon, and which of the guns that you recommend can I get under $500? So when women ask you, Peyton, you know, what's the best handgun for me that, you know, I'm not, maybe it's my first handgun, and I want something that's manageable that I can shoot. What do you recommend?
Well, the caliber is not as important as most people think. I'll bet as many people have been killed by a .22 long rifle as have been from a .45 ACP.
Yeah.
I would say the 380 Auto is about the lightest caliber I would want to have for self-defense purposes. But her question is, she lives in a city or a state that denies her constitutional right, apparently. If she can't, I would first say, if you should be able to legally own a shotgun, even in Boston, I believe. I'm not up on Boston law, really. State of Massachusetts is quite draconian on its anti-Second Amendment, anti-constitutional stance. In other words, they try to keep guns out of the hands of the people. But a short-barrel shotgun in 20-gauge pump action is manageable and is certainly enough stopping power to work for you. And if you can't own a gun at all, which is... I've experimented with the stun guns. They're probably illegal, too, though, aren't they? I guess you're going to ultimately have to make a decision about which is more important, the safety of yourself and your family or challenging a law.
Yeah. There's a good question here from Wayne, about the course, from Wayne from Arkansas. Do course attendees with a concealed carry permit bring their own weapon?
Okay. My course is... grandfathered under Colorado law, so when you finish course I can give you a certificate that shows you took the course and have had firearms training. In most states, 36 of them I believe, that's sufficient with what other requirements they have, the FBI check, etc. Now what was the other part of the question?
So what were you talking about? Can you issue a concealed carry?
No, your home state has to do that. Then you have to look at, in Arkansas,
So Wayne's asking, he has a concealed carry permit.
Okay.
He wants to know, can he bring his own weapon to the training course?
You can, but the best way, well, it's a little dicey taking guns on planes these days, and you'll probably have to make a connection. So you have to make sure that at each airport you land in, you're having that gun's not unlawful. You also have to make sure it isn't stolen being transported. What I generally recommend is you UPS the gun directly to me here and with no ammunition and insure it for much more than it's worth and identify it as machine parts.
Yeah.
If it's insured, it's unlikely to be stolen.
So the
when you get here, so.
The answer is yes. If you can bring your weapon with you, but just be advised that you will be have to, you know, maneuver it through the obstacle course of actually getting it there. Now, Peyton provides all the ammunition and the guns that are needed there at the course, because there is a live fire section at the very end. In fact, I've got a question here from Peter from Paterson, New Jersey, mm-hmm. who asks, are shotguns covered in the course? And that's a good question, because
yeah.
a lot of people are used to, you know, use a shotgun for home defense.
Right. So, we check you out on the Mossberg 500 and the Remington 870, and also a break-open shotgun. It's hard to beat a shotgun for home defense, really. So, yes, we definitely train on shotguns.
Yeah.
Okay. And some other weapons you'll probably, unless you go to Afghanistan, or you're probably not going to see.
Yeah. And so that's one of the aims of the live fire portion, is to become familiarized with several different types of weapons so that you can confidently be able to pick one up and be able to use it effectively. I mean, you never know. If you're in a home invasion, let's say you're ambushed, taken hostage or whatever, and the people that come in, maybe you've never shot a shotgun before in your life, maybe you don't own one now, but the people that come in and hold you hostage, they might have a shotgun. And if you can overpower somebody or counterattack, now you've got a shotgun in your hand. Do you know how to use it?
Same with an M16 or an AK-47, too.
Exactly, exactly. So most people maybe don't have access to an AK-47. You'll get to shoot one at the course, so you'll be able to understand more about the weapon and how to fire it if you have to. I do have another person here from Chicago that has her,
oof,
let me say her hand up, but it's because it says Maryland on here, but it might not be. So from Chicago.
No, it's my my name is Anton. Maryland is my wife. We're on a family plan.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. My question. Well, first I want to say, Peyton, I'm very, very sorry you're retiring. Are you retiring, or is just a course?
I'm not sure I can afford to retire, but I've been doing this for 23 years or so, and I am 63. I think it's kept me in good shape, though. I keep my weight under control. But I want to live my remaining years with my wife of these 37 years and have a good time and travel and that sort of thing. That's basically where it's at.
Okay, because I bought your DVDs, and they are phenomenal. I want to get out there, but if this is your last time, it's like, wow, what's next, you know?
Yes, there is a thing, I'm with Stephen Hayes, I may do in August. Stephen Hayes,
okay.
We may do that in August. We've talked about it. And what can I say? If you want, this may be your last chance, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, Peyton. I appreciate it. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for the kind words.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so we're kind of coming down to the end here. One person had a question about he and his wife are in their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
What's the limitations for people coming to the course? Peyton, a lot of people, I want to say your age. As I laugh.
Nobody's that old.
No, but I mean, like, look, older people can be more of a target, right? I mean, they're a safer target for crime. So
I've had people as 70 years and even more take the course, but I would want some documentation that you were healthy enough, didn't have any pre-existing conditions and stuff. Adrenaline does get the heart pumping, you know. 10, 15 years ago, what was it? Let's say it's 12 years ago. I had a heart attack myself. But email me directly, unless, let's see. We don't keep somebody out simply because of their age or a missing limb or physical handicap. We just want to make sure that we're also at 8,500 feet altitude. But if you'll go to the website and email me directly, we can discuss it and see if it's appropriate for you.
You want to give your email address one more time, Peyton?
Okay, PEYTONQ, the numeral 1, at gmail.com.
Got it.
PeytonQ1 at gmail.com.
Got it. Peyton, some really great information. I mean, just even in the broadcast that we did here, you gave some really good training drills, some really good familiarization with this. But again, everybody, just like you know that you can't just go buy a handgun and never take it down to the range to know how it operates. You know, there's one thing about knowing about adrenal stress and how to fire tactically under those conditions. It's a totally different one to be in a scenario where you feel it and you have to use a live firearm in the use of it. It's two different worlds. So I highly recommend, again, take advantage of this opportunity to get to Peyton's last class here. Use the button that's on the page there. Go apply for it. Go fill out the form and apply for it. Peyton will be in contact with you to be able to make sure this is a really good fit for you and you're a good fit for the course. And, again, we're going to throw in for everybody that signs up for the course and attends, you're also going to get one full year of access to the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants. At no cost, we're going to give you a platinum membership there. Peyton, again, man, I really really appreciate everything that you've done for ISUQC. I mean, this isn't the end. I'm not done with you yet. Yeah, there's no place you can go on this planet that I'm going to be done, like, interviewing you. So we'll have you back on. But I really amazing course. I really appreciate you taking time tonight to kind of help everybody here and give some great training advice.
It is my pleasure indeed.
Yeah. All right, everybody, so you know what to do. Go check out the website for Peyton's courses at stressshooting.com. And I guess that's it. The only thing left to do is to click that button, go fill out the form, and check it out. Okay? All right, everybody. This is Jeff Anderson from the International Society of Close Quarter Combatants saying thank you, train hard, stay safe, prepare now.